Soundhouse, Vertigo, Matt McKeekin, Steve Northeast, and Warhorse will be appearing at Sullivan Hall. And that wraps up things for Concert Billboard for July 21st and July 22nd. If you'd like to get your band listed, contact us at scene@wusb.fm. And thanks for listening to 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook.
And it's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook's time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you.
1965 was the year of Sproul Plaza, when the University of California at Berkeley erupted, when Mario Savio, a senior, and Clark Kerr, president, went over the top into a new kind of no man's land, and no college campus would ever be quite the same again. 1965 also was the year of the intervention in Santo Domingo.
I have ordered the Secretary of Defense to put the necessary American troops ashore in order to give protection to hundreds of Americans who are still in the Dominican Republic and to escort them safely back to this country.
The political vacuum that had existed since the fall of Rafael Trujillo in 1961 exploded in revolution that caused American leadership to fear a replay of the Castro episode in Cuba.
What began as a popular democratic revolution committed to democracy and social justice very shortly moved and was taken over and really seized and placed into the hands of a band of communist conspirators.
The U.S. intervention, which began as a police action of 522 Marines, ended as occupation by an expeditionary army of 22,000 men.
Cop, you see that courtyard in there with the wall around it? Over to the right, further to the right of where he's hitting. Right in under those palm trees. What they're doing is shooting back from under those trees.
It lasted 4 months and cost 28 American and 2,850 Dominican lives.
Rebel snipers still are everywhere, and we think they're behind us now. But when it's about to begin,
one of the chief lessons learned was the error of unilateral commitment of American troops without the fullest consultation with the Organization of American States, particularly when the intervention appeared to be insensitive to the subtle difference between a democratic revolt and a communist takeover. The election of Joaquin Balaguer as president in June 1966 is now cited as a vindication of American policy. But some, including the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, labeled it the arrogance of power.
And yes, the arrogance of power. That's a good name for a talk show, don't you think? Absolutely. That was the voice of Walter Cronkite. You'd have to be in some kind of state of denial or complete ignorance to not know that voice, even if you never saw a newscast of his. And, well, I was lucky enough to see some of his newscasts, although, to be honest, in my house we watched John Chancellor over at, on NBC. Voltaire, you're here. You're a product of a much later generation.
Yes.
What
Generation Y represent.
Yeah. What network news did you grow up on in your family? Or did you not even have news?
We had news. I think we were more of an NBC family as well.
NBC. So probably yeah. Tom Brokaw for you, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I remember all the way back to the Huntley Brinkley Report. And I remember that time they would play Beethoven ending each program. But I remember the time when Chet Huntley left. You know, he just disappeared while he said goodbye. And it was very sad. And then he died shortly afterwards. That's probably why he left. And then David Brinkley went on for a while, and then that turned into John Chancellor, and then that turned into Tom Brokaw. And then ABC, of course, you had Frank Reynolds, and you had Peter Jennings. I forget who was before Frank Reynolds. But all this history. But the thing is, Walter Cronkite pretty much just was there all the time. He was a legend. And we're going to play a few bits. Pick a number from 1 to 35 and at random. I'm going to just go to a track.
Seven.
Let's see what number 7 is.
There was the threat of new Soviet intervention in the Congo following the Lumumba assassination. There was the threat of a communist takeover in Laos. The Russians were on the threshold of putting the first man in space.
Each day, the crises multiply. Each day, their solution grows more difficult. Each day, we draw nearer the hour of maximum danger as weapons spread and hostile forces grow stronger. I feel I must inform the Congress that our analysis over the last 10 days make it clear that in each of the principal areas of crisis, the tide of events has been running out, and time has not been our friend.
Yeah, all kinds of history from the 1960s, a lot involving the Vietnam War. That's what Walter Cronkite was known for. In case you wonder why we're talking about Walter Cronkite, he died a few days ago. At the age of, I think, 92. And he retired. He retired back in... I know when it was. It was in 1981 because not too long ago we put a Voice of Long Island on the internet and we were talking about the last newscast of Walter Cronkite all the way back then. Since then, we've seen Dan Rather come in and now he's retired. There's something just about Walter Cronkite's way of delivering what just made you, I guess, want to trust him. He just seems so sincere. You know, he's like the Peter Mansbridge of the United States. Actually, it's a bit of a joke because Peter Mansbridge is the guy who does the National in Canada on the CBC, and people call him the Walter Cronkite of Canada. But, you know, I think it sort of works the other way now because he's been there forever, and more people might know him now than know Walter Cronkite, which is kind of sad. Pick another number.
12.
You did well with that one. What number?
12.
12. 12. That might be a good one. Let's see what history Walter will bring us here.
A single paragraph spoken by Kennedy at the time of the call-up of reserves resulting from the Berlin crisis would have a haunting echo.
There's always an equity in life. Some men are killed in a war, and some men are wounded, and some men never leave the country, and some men are stationed in the Antarctic, and some are stationed in San Francisco. It's very hard in military or in personal life to assure complete equality. Life is unfair.
There's one I'd like to actually look at here having to do with Cuba back in 1960 when things first started to hit the fan. This is interesting as far as the debate over Cuban policy.
But the most agonizing wound was self-inflicted and almost mortal. Castro in Cuba had been a bitter campaign issue between Kennedy and Richard Nixon in 1960.
I look at Cuba, 90 miles off the coast of the United States. By 1965 or 1970, will there be other Cubans in Latin America? I believe that this struggle is going to go on and it may well be decided in the next decade.
I think that Senator Kennedy's policies and recommendations for the handling of the Castro regime are probably the most dangerously irresponsible recommendations that he's made during the course of this campaign. In effect, what Senator Kennedy recommends is that the United States government should give help to the exiles and to those within Cuba who oppose the Castro regime, provided they are anti-Batista.
The action that Vice President Nixon opposed in that debate was one that, as a member of the Eisenhower administration, he had supported. In his book, Six Crises, published in 1962, he frankly stated, "Under Kennedy's demand for militant policies, I was in a position of a fighter with one hand tied behind his back. I knew we had a program underway to deal with Castro, but I could not hint at its existence." Nixon further declared that Kennedy also had been secretly briefed on the CIA plan. For the debates, he concluded, "I must attack the Kennedy proposal as irresponsible."
The Charter of the United Nations, its preamble, Article 1 and Article 2, provide that there shall be no intervention by one nation in the internal affairs of another. Now, I don't know what Senator Kennedy suggests when he says that we should help those who oppose the Castro regime. But I do know this, that if we were to follow that recommendation, that we would lose all of our friends in Latin America, we would probably be condemned in the United Nations, and we would not accomplish our objective. I know something else. It would be an open invitation for Mr. Khrushchev to come into Latin America and to engage us in what would be a civil war and possibly even worse than that.
Wow, possibly even worse than that. You know, back then in the 60s, everybody was all on edge thinking that the commies were right around the corner. And it was a, you know, similar mentality to some of the things that we hear today with regards to Iraq and Al-Qaeda and all kinds of...
And Latin America, too.
Latin America, well, you know, yeah, not as much as in the 1980s, but yeah, certainly. But back then, it was a real fever pitch. So, you know, World War III was right around the corner. People were very nervous about these things. So, you know, Voltaire, I don't know if you realize just what different world it was back then. But we have this time capsule with all of Walter Cronkite's newscasts and reports and things that he's given over the years. And we're lucky. We're lucky that he was around for all that. I'm going to try a couple more here. I'm not sure this is the right one. This should be, this is entitled The Times They Are a-Changin'. I want to see if we actually get the right one here.
A presidential commission appointed in 1967 and headed by Governor Kerner of Illinois surveyed 24 riots in 23 cities and described America as a racist society.
Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. Reaction to last summer's disorders has quickened the movement and deepened the division.
Most citizens and the president who had appointed the commission did not heed the call.
Okay, that wasn't the right one, but I have the right one right here. The numbers are off by two. I don't know why, but that's just the way they are. Okay, this is the times era changing.
In an era of instant communication, when a shot fired in the plain of Jars or the Gaza Strip could literally be heard round the world, when the superpowers drilled themselves in war games and calculated response, miscalculation became the order of the day. The USA at the Bay of Pigs and the Gulf of Tonkin, the USSR during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the Six-Day War.
And, of course, the one that we're all familiar with is the one that actually, 40th anniversary, a couple of days ago, or was it yesterday? Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
The landing on the moon. Let's see if we can call that one up.
President Nixon was on the aircraft carrier Hornet to welcome the astronauts back to Earth.
Neil, Buzz, and Mike, gee, you look great. You feel as good as you look.
Oh, feel great.
You
feel just perfect, Mr. President.
Yeah. I was thinking that this is the greatest week in the history of the world since the creation. As a result of what you've done, the world's never been closer together before.
Wow. Well, Nixon was sure in a good mood that day. that's brings back some memories. All right, last piece. One last piece. Woodstock. You have to hear it, what we say about Woodstock back then in 1969, was it? Yes. Let's hear Walter Cronkite.
In between Apollo 11 and Woodstock, there was an incident on a bridge at Chappaquiddick, Massachusetts, that ended the life of Mary Jo Kopechne and may have affected the presidential dreams of the last of the Kennedy brothers.
My fellow citizens, I have requested this opportunity to talk to the people of Massachusetts about the tragedy which happened last Friday evening.
On July 25th, 1969, Senator Edward Kennedy spoke to the voters of Massachusetts.
This morning I entered a plea of guilty to the charge of leaving the scene of an accident. This last week has been an agonizing one for me and for the members of my family. And the grief we feel over the loss of a wonderful friend will remain with us the rest of our lives. The people of this state are entitled to representation by men who inspire their utmost confidence. For this reason, I would understand full well why some might think it right for me to resign. For me, this will be a difficult decision to make. And so I ask you tonight, the people of Massachusetts, to think this through with me. In facing this decision, I seek your advice and opinion. In making it, I seek your prayers. For this is a decision that I will have finally to make on my own.
Chappaquiddick, Woodstock, the walk on the moon, all momentary spectaculars, but not enough to neutralize the constant polarizing force, Vietnam.
Okay, no, we're not going to talk about Vietnam. Sorry, Walter. And I'm sorry about that, too, because I played the wrong one. Well, it's not my fault. The numbers I print out on the piece of paper do not correlate to the numbers on the track. It was off by two, then all of a sudden it was off by one. So I think I've got Woodstock now. This will be the last piece, just Walter Cronkite's report as he presented it on Woodstock.
But 27 days after Tranquility Base, on an untranquil sea of mud at 42.02 degrees north, 74.08 degrees west, there was a walk in space that 400,000 long-haired pilgrims in and out of sweatshirts called the greatest weekend since the creation.
Dig it, dig it!
Fire!
It came to be known as the Woodstock Nation, in search of rock, acid, pot, peace, and just being together. 400,000 Americans between 15 and 25 flocked to Max Yasker's dairy farm at Bethel, New York, for a weekend with Sly and the Family Stone, Country Joe and the Fish, Janis Joplin, the Jefferson Airplane, Santana, Crosby, Stills and Nash, The Who, Joan Baez, and Arlo Guthrie, among others. The festival was declared a disaster area, and if there had been a riot, the commission that would have investigated it would have probably blamed negligent planning by the promoters, lack of water, food, medical and sanitary facilities, and stormy weather. It would have cited also the abundance of marijuana, some hard drugs, communal living, and the exploitation of thousands of turned away ticket holders who never got their $18 back. Yet there was no violence, relatively little illness for a population of this size. Three people died, two were born, and in a rare happening, even the police got rave notices. There was some paranoia. The establishment was blamed by some for having seeded the clouds causing the downpour. Some critics of the festival called it an orgy organized by the communists, and the promoters ended up suing each other. At the end, Farmer Yasker stood on center stage and saluted the multitude.
I'm a farmer. I don't know how to speak to 20 people at one time, let alone a crowd like this. This is the largest group of people ever assembled in one place. But I think you people have proven something to the world, that 500,000 kids can get together and have 3 days of fun and music, and have nothing but fun and music. And I got...
Yeah, Woodstock, wow, okay. And that's a conclusion of our tribute to Walter Cronkite in his own words. He witnessed so much history and brought it to the American public, and I think it's important to have somebody that knows how to deliver it, how to interpret everything, and how to just, I guess, read the news in a way that you can understand, in a way that you can appreciate the history that's happening right in front of your eyes. And you ever get to hear any of Walter Cronkite before this?
Probably just his voice. I mean,
yeah.
I never knew his... what name went behind it, but his voice is so iconic.
Yeah, no, it's a very familiar voice and something that we will remember for a very long time. Okay, this is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And we have a bunch of stories to read, and hopefully we'll take some phone calls. 631-632-9872 is our telephone number. Let's see, we've got a bunch of apologies. Everyone's apologizing this week. So let's start with John McCain. John McCain's apologizing to Jackson Brown. Yeah, Jackson Brown at Woodstock? I think he's a little too young for that. But
no, that he didn't list him.
No. Well, Walter Cronkite didn't list everybody. He listed a lot of people, but not everybody. But basically, this is a story from the Christian Science Monitor, so it's a little bit sarcastic. And it says, neither side has much to brag about. Jackson Brown hasn't had a hit since the Jurassic period. And John McCain, who was born in the Jurassic period, is in a party that seems to be heading towards mass extinction. You picking up on the sarcasm at all? It's very subtle. But any publicity is good publicity. And for someone who hasn't had a hit record in decades, today's announcement that Jackson Brown has settled a lawsuit with John McCain might be the only chance that the singer-songwriter has at being in the news. Ouch. The singer, who now advertises that he plays at birthday parties and business meetings, ooh, that's kind of interesting, didn't like that the Ohio Republican Party played his song Running on Empty last year during the 2008 presidential campaign. basically, they played the song in order to mock then-candidate Barack Obama for the part of his energy plan that advised Americans to conserve gas through proper tire inflation, running on empty. Yeah. So Brown did what seemingly all entertainers, except Lee Greenwood, do when a Republican plays one of their songs, sue. And although McCain and the Republican Party made many attempts to get the lawsuit dismissed, they could not, so they waved the white flag. We apologize that a portion of the Jackson Brown song, Running on Empty, was used without permission, read the statement from the Ohio Republican Party, the RNC, and Senator John McCain. Although Senator McCain had no knowledge of or involvement in the creation or distribution of the web campaign video, Senator McCain does not support or condone any actions taken by anyone involved in his 2008 presidential election campaign that were inconsistent with artists' rights or the various legal protections afforded to intellectual property.
Wow.
Yeah, although it's extraordinarily unlikely for a candidate for president to become involved in the selection of a song for an event, Brown seemed convinced enough that McCain had some knowledge of it, stating today that one would hope that a presidential candidate would not only know the law, but respect it. It was a matter of bringing that issue to bear. Regardless, Brown seemed happy with the end result. This settlement is really a good affirmation of what I believed my rights to be, and all writers' rights to be. The settlement, though, we don't know what it was. We have no idea how much they...
It was some insane amount.
Probably some insane amount, yeah. But they have a link on the Christian Science Monitor website if you want Jackson Brown to play at your birthday party. Click on that link. And, yeah, the fun continues. Let's see. Who else is apologizing? Well, Israel's not apologizing. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected on Sunday the Obama administration's demand that Israel halt the planning of a Jewish housing project in a predominantly Arab East Jerusalem neighborhood. Well, you know, demanding that they do that, I guess that's a bit much. Yeah, but still, our sovereignty over Jerusalem cannot be challenged. This means that residents of Jerusalem may purchase apartments in all parts of the city, Netanyahu said at the start of the weekly cabinet meeting. We cannot accept the idea that Jews will not have the right to live and purchase in all parts of Jerusalem. Yeah. He said, I can only describe to myself what would happen if someone would propose that Jews could not live in certain neighborhoods in New York, London, Paris, or Rome. There would certainly be a major international outcry. Accordingly, we cannot agree to such a decree. We cannot agree to such a decree in Jerusalem, he said. yeah, okay, fine.
So basically he's playing the victim in a place he colonized.
Yeah.
He can't, in Orwell's shooting the elephant or whatever, he said that You can't claim victimhood when you're the imperialist. So
yeah,
it's kind of hypocritical.
It's not quite the same thing as New York, London, Paris, or Rome, but it is their neck of the woods. And sure, the U.S. maybe shouldn't be making demands of them, but at the same time, the U.S. maybe shouldn't be supporting them either. So you know what, Israel, you want to do this, fine, but you know, no more financial help from us. Go it yourself and see how that works out. That's what I think is the right approach.
Yes.
But I don't think... I think if Obama said that, he'd be apologizing pretty soon to people, and that would be the end of that. Hear about that U.S. soldier captured by the Taliban. Sort of apologizing, I guess, for what the United States is doing over there. Basically asking people to send the soldiers home. Please bring us home so we can be back where we belong and not over here. You have the power to make our government bring the other soldiers home, he said. The captors, they said, as you can see, the American soldier is in good shape and good health. He's being treated well based on the guidelines of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan regarding war prisoners. And that was a statement made on a website along with the video that was released of the soldier who was identified as Private First Class Bowie R. Bergdahl of Ketchum, Idaho. Now, get this. This is interesting, too. They've been basically distributing some pamphlets in Afghanistan written in the Pashto language. And one shows the image of an American soldier shaking hands in a group of kids with the message, "One of our American guests is missing. Return the guest to his home. Call us at this particular phone number." American guests. That's what invaders are known as now. That's something. I never knew that. The other one is a little bit different. It shows a U.S. soldier kicking down a door and then an outstretched hand with a superimposed image of a soldier, his head and arms drooping, and the words, "If you do not release the U.S. soldier, then you will be hunted." I don't know if that's really going to get the effect that they apparently want.
Wow.
But wow, talk about contrast in messages there. And wait, how do you make sure it gets to the right people?
Those were pamphlets given out by the Americans? Or?
Yeah, apparently given out by the Americans.
Wow.
So, I mean, I guess one is meant for kids to see, you know, our American guests, these friends that are hanging out and kicking in your doors. And the other is meant for people that might be a little bit more grown up and mature and can handle a stern word every now and then. Yeah, okay. Okay, now this story, this is a very interesting story. This is actually coming out of New York involving one of our representatives, Carolyn Maloney. Now, I should point this out because I make this mistake all the time. I always mix her up with Carol McCarthy. She's not. She's a different person completely. Carol McCarthy is the one who was elected as representative after her husband and son were killed in the Long Island Railroad massacre by Colin Ferguson. And that's not who this is at all. So Carolyn Maloney is apologizing. And interesting story here. She is apologizing over her use of the N-word. That's right. She used the N-word. Now, listen to how this came about. She says, "I apologize for having repeated a word I find disgusting," she said in a statement yesterday. Maloney used the racial slur while relaying a story she'd heard. The potentially damaging gaffe comes a week before Maloney's scheduled launch of the her Democratic challenge to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand at the polls next fall. So basically, she's supposedly going to be running for Hillary Clinton's old seat that Gillibrand has right now. But this particular thing could have thrown a monkey wrench into all of that. Now, I'm trying to read this. A very tiny print here. I'm sorry. A week before your announcement, you don't want to apologize for anything, said a political expert, particularly a word that would offend the core demographic group. Is it fatal? No, but it sure ain't good. Use the word ain't. I don't know if that's really good. That's bad English.
That ain't good.
Yeah,
good.
That is not good. Maloney aides say the East Side Congresswoman is undeterred by the controversy and will formally announce her Senate candidacy next Monday or Tuesday. She spent last night raising about $300,000 for her House campaign war chest with a cash bash, I guess that's what they call it these days, headlined by ex-President Bill Clinton at the St. Regis Hotel in Midtown. Asked about the flap at the fundraiser, Maloney refused to expand on her earlier statement. She made the slur, and, you know, I take exception to that. She made the slur. You know, I don't know if this qualifies as a slur, because basically she was repeating a story, and we're gonna tell you the story. We're going to tell you exactly what it was she said. She made the quote-unquote slur, this is according to the Daily News, while criticizing Gillibrand to City Hall, a biweekly publication and political website. Now, she was relaying a conversation she'd had with someone disappointed in the new senator's stance on English-only education, which is a hot-button issue in the Hispanic community, basically making it so that you have to speak English or nothing else.
And they don't also cut funding for ESL programs.
Yeah, it is a hot button. Now, I'm going to read exactly what it is she said. "I got a call from someone from Puerto Rico. And Gillibrand went to Puerto Rico and came out for English-only education. And he said it was like saying nigger to a Puerto Rican." Yeah, I used the word. Oh, my God, I used the word. You have to use the word because you can't say it any other way. It was like saying N-word to a Puerto Rican. It doesn't make any sense. It sounds stupid. And this is not the same thing. This is not the same thing at all as using the N-word in a derogatory sense. She's basically emphasizing how offensive somebody found something. And I get it. I get what she's saying here. And apparently she's too afraid to actually stand up for herself and say, you know, this is how it was meant. It was meant in a particular context. You simpletons, you don't seem to get that. In a statement, the Reverend Al Sharpton, you know, lots of times I support what he does. Lots of times I agree with him, and I get lambasted for it by many people. But in this particular time, I cannot disagree more. He's supporting Gillibrand, for one thing, regardless. He said her use of the word was alarming. No public official even in quoting someone else, should loosely use such an offensive term and should certainly challenge someone using the term to him or her. So according to Al Sharpton, she should have said to the Puerto Rican person saying that this was as this word was it was tantamount to saying this word to a black person, that it was offensive to use that word. That's the whole point of the statement, is that it's offensive. You know, I mean, where do we draw the line here? Do we stop making references to the Holocaust because that was offensive too? I mean, the imagery of the horrible things that happened during World War II and the camps and all that. We don't want to think about that. So let's just call that the H period or something like that. You know, let's not refer to it because it'll just bring such unpleasant thoughts into our heads. You know, you lose all the emphasis of what you're trying to say if you don't use the words that illustrate what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think that it's quite the same as the Holocaust. Which
maybe
is.
Not. It was the best I could pull up.
I think it would
notice.
Be closer to banning the word like faggot or something.
Yeah.
And
the F word. You can't even say the F word because people think we're different F words. So how do you use that particular? How do you indicate that particular word if you don't want to use that particular word? I think, you know, in regards to the word faggot, that's something that needs to be said to indicate how hateful people can be.
Yes.
Because if you just say, oh, he called me a nasty word, people are like, oh, boo-hoo, you know, grow up and deal with it. But when you actually hear how it sounds, it kind of it wakes you up. It makes you realize, yeah, this is serious. This is something that should be, you know, paid attention to. Anyway, Maloney explained, it's no excuse, but I was so caught up in relaying the story exactly as it was told to me that in doing so, I repeated a word that should never be repeated. Never be repeated. So this word should never, ever be said. I mean, that's just dumb. How do you learn? How do you learn from history if you don't ever examine history and hear these words and hear what they represent and learn why they're objectionable? Sharpton said he takes Maloney's apology at face value, but he said the incident could hurt her in the African-American community. Yeah, I don't think the African-American community is that narrow-minded and that, I don't know. It just seems very simple.
I think, if anything, it hurt Sharpton because I know, like, I find it, like, really depressing that he would do that because it's like, going to alienate people and create a backlash and give like.
Yeah, it alienated me. I mean, you know, this is something that I just, there are people who would say, because you use that word, that makes you a racist, which I guess would mean the whole Wu-Tang Clan are racist and everybody in the. All kinds of literature. Yeah, I mean, everyone has racial sides to them, you know, of bias and things like that. But it's so simplistic to simply say, if you use that word, that makes you a racist. No, that's not how it works. I personally don't think she's a racist, he said, but I think it is disturbing. Does she regularly allow this kind of word in conversation? Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to read something from Wikipedia, a little bit of background here, just to show some of the perspective here. Now, in the United States, the word nigger was not always considered derogatory. It was instead used by many as merely denoting black skin, as it was in other parts of the English-speaking world. Now, 19th century literature, there are many uses of the word with no pejorative connotation. Charles Dickens and Joseph Conrad, who published a book called The Nigger of the Narcissus in 1897, which I guess is probably banned now because you can't have, what is it, the N-word of the narcissist? You know, you have to look at the word sometimes. He used the word without racist intent. Mark Twain often put the word into the mouths of his characters, white and black, but did not use the word when writing as himself in his autobiographical Life on the Mississippi because he was too intelligent to have to use that word. But when you're referring to other people who are not as intelligent, then, yeah, you know, you don't shy away from the subject. In the United States, the United Kingdom, the word is now widely considered derogatory, but as recently as the 1950s, it was widely regarded as acceptable to refer to black people in that way. They actually had a brand of cigarettes, licorice cigarettes, sold to children that bore the brand name Nigger Boy. Not kidding. By the 1970s, these and other terms had become recognized as offensive and had been outlawed by stricter government legislation. Historically, British people would often describe a dark shade of brown as nigger brown. Yeah, it's offensive, but that is history. That is what they did. In 1969, Yoko Ono told the British women's magazine Nova that woman is the nigger of the world, a phrase with which John Lennon would 3 years later cause controversy in the United States by using that as a song title.
Is the leader of the world. Yes, she is. Think about it. Woman is the leader of the world. Think about it. Do something about it. We make her paint her face and dance. She won't be a slave and say that she don't love. If she's real, we say she's trying to be a man. While putting her down, we pretend that she's above us. Woman is the nigger of the world. Yes, she is. You don't believe me? Take a look at the one you will.
Yeah, I don't know if people want to ban this song too because of the use of the word, or simply bleep it out every time. What would that accomplish? What's accomplished when you ban books like Huckleberry Finn that use the word a lot? Actually, I think over 200 times. It's a big difference between using a word to make a point and using a word to demean somebody. And I think that's something that I want to call it the fundamentalist left, because it really, sometimes the left can be very fundamentalist and simple-minded. And maybe it's not fair to simply throw this at them, because I know a lot of right-wing people, too, who buy into this nonsense. But you have to think a little bit more intelligently, a little bit more complexly to really understand that words can't simply be banned. I mean, we deal with words here at the radio station all the time that we cannot say. There are 7 words we're not allowed to say. This is one word we can say. We don't say it unless we're making a point, because it's an insulting word. It's a derogatory word. It's a word with bad history. But it also, when you're talking about history, it's a word that you need to say in order to understand the history. The singer Elvis Costello used the word in his contemporary State of the World Today song Oliver's Army in 1979. In the second verse about the Berlin Wall, he sang, "All it takes is one itchy trigger, one more widow, one less white nigger," referring to those killed by the East German troops for trying to leave East Germany by circumventing the wall. On a later edition of the program Stars in Their Eyes, a contestant sang this song and was forced by the producers to substitute the line as "one more widow, one less white figure." I mean, come on. Are we that stupid that we have to do things like this? The shock effect of the word can also be used to deliberately cause offense. Several historians and activists, such as Dick Gregory, have said the use of N-word instead of nigger robs younger generations of the full history of black people in America. The term has sometimes been extended in meaning so as to refer to all disadvantaged people. For example, Ron Dellums, an American politician, once said that it's time for somebody to lead all of America's niggers. In 1978, musical artist Patti Smith, she employed the word in a similar context in her song Rock and Roll Nigger.
I wake up, I am lying peacefully, I'm lying peaceful and my knees are open to the sun. I desire him, he is absolutely ready to seize me. In heart, I am Muslim, in heart, I am an American,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of history here. And that's Patti Smith. This is a classic. And I'm sure this song will be banned too if you let simple-minded reactionary people take charge. Let's take some phone calls. Maybe this has generated some interest. Maybe this has generated some controversy. Our number is 631-632-9872. Let's see how quickly we can plunge into delay.
This is T-Bone Burnett saying don't believe anything that you hear except for the wild truth on WUSB.
And we're in delay. Wow, I think that's the quickest we ever did it. Pretty good. 631-632-9872 is our telephone number. And we'll be happy to hear from other people having thoughts and opinions on this and other subjects. But just to go on a little bit, there are so many examples of censorship and things that were acceptable in the 1970s, such as episodes of Sanford and Son, okay? One of my favorite programs where the word was used and had to be cut out in the 21st century because people can't handle that. They can't handle that history. They can't handle that particular use. It's really, I don't know. What do you think, Voltaire? Somebody who grew up in a different generation. I mean, maybe you have totally different values.
No, I mean, I don't think I ever really said the word, like, in kind of, I'm generally the type of person that would say the N-word, but, mm-hmm. like...
There are times when you say the N-word when you're not actually trying to make a point or trying to say, well, you know, this person was yelling out, you know, the word N-word, N-word over and over again as he was shooting the person doesn't, you know, carry the same effect, obviously. And also in literature, in history, in entertainment, too, sometimes. I mean, the crowd went wild on Sanford and Son. I'll just read the basic scene. Fred's in traffic court. Fred Sanford is in traffic court. Confronting a white traffic policeman who wrote his son Lamont a ticket. "Hey, look here," Fred asked the policeman. "Why don't you arrest some white drivers?" And when the policeman answers, "I do," Fred gestures to the court observers who are all black and asks, "Well, where are they? Look at all these niggers in here." Upon uttering this statement, the live studio audience went crazy with laughter and applause. Yeah, Red Fox had to pause for the crowd to settle down before delivering the coup de grace. "There's enough niggers in here to make a Tarzan movie." Yeah, well now, on TV land, all they say is, "What do you have against black people?" I don't know if the crowd still goes wild, but it's not the same. It's not the same, and it's also not the same as being derogatory. And people have to realize there's a big difference.
I think there's an important point, Ted, here. Back to your earlier point about calling this the fundamentalist left, I don't really think this is a left or right issue because... Mm-hmm. It like when Al Sharpton is pointing this, I don't think that fundamentalist left kind of sounds like a far left thing. But Al Sharpton is certainly not the far left. If he's supporting Gillibrand, who's
true,
by
true.
Any standard is a extremely like right wing person. Uh-huh. Even as far as Democrats go, so
that's true. And she's a Democrat, but you're right, she's
and there
right
are
wing.
Plenty of people on the far left, like.
But do you say
that would say no? This is not a big
right.
deal.
Do you say the whole politically correct movement is that something? Because that gets blamed on the left all the time.
Politically correct is like the word itself. Politically correct, it's like a BS term that the far right made up. In my opinion,
I agree with you. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up, please. Hello, anybody there? 631-632-9872. You know, check your mouthpieces. Make sure they actually work before you give us a call. And we'll be happy to talk to you on the air about this or any other subject that you might have something to say about. This is certainly something that's controversial, no question about that. We had like 3 phone calls and they all disappeared at the same time. Boy, well, you know, this extends to other things as well. Should we take this? I'll get into another example in a second. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up.
Dylan, I think that the whole politically correct movement type thing that's going on in the 70s to now, like you're saying with the Sanford and Son.
Uh-huh.
Changed as far as... Can you hear me?
Yeah, just speak up a little bit.
All right. I think everything has changed. I mean, if you look at shows like Archie Bunker, if that show came out today, it would never make it.
Exactly.
The,
great example.
Bunker,
that was one of my favorite programs, and not because, Archie Bunker was a racist, because it taught us through humor the value of people, how hatred is completely wrong, and how black and white can get along and things like that. You know, corny things, but taught in a way that spoke to you as an intelligent human being and didn't patronize you. You know, and I don't. You're right. I don't think we could have a program like that today. I don't think it would work.
We still do, like,
helps society laugh at itself on a certain angle too. You know, whereas stereotypes overall were, you know, they best. It wasn't about, you know, the hatred and this and that, like you're saying on the air.
Uh huh. Go ahead, Walter.
I know that on certain shows, at least as far as cable goes, like HBO, there's been certain episodes of The Wire and Curb Your Enthusiasm, which have shown, like, racist people, but they're making fun of the people for being racist.
On cable, you can get on premium cable, you can get away with more. But, it's you have to also be careful, and you might fall into this whole thing that Carolyn Maloney fell into, where you have to apologize for something that I don't think you really should have to apologize for. Anyway, thanks for your call, sir.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
I don't think you really should have to apologize.
Hey, speak up, please. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm on the air?
Yes, go ahead. Speak up.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This is a perfect subject. First of all, I just wanted to say that I think we have censorship in our country continuously, and anyone who's upset about the use of the N-word should read The Slave Ship by Marcus Rediker, a fantastic documentary about the legacy of slavery.
Uh-huh.
As far as censorship, I recently saw the movie Bruno. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, you're opening up a hornet's nest here, but go ahead.
Well, I believe that it is a piece of political propaganda that I applaud. And the humor is intense, and mm-hmm. I think Sacha Baron Cohen is our generation's Lenny Bruce.
That's a good point. He definitely is. And Lenny Bruce certainly would not shy away from using certain words to make a point, and that's what made him such a genius.
The statement was he used the word nigger and talked about, we got a nigger in the audience, got a jigaboo, we got all these things, and he said he wanted to rob those words of the power to hurt,
uh-huh.
so no little black kid would go home from school crying because somebody called him a nigger. So it was like, you know, it was a whole, you know, thing, you know, in a context of intelligence.
Which a lot of people would not appreciate and would not get, and I don't know if that even worked.
That's because he's, like I believe, Baron Cohen is a pioneer in the mind of the collective consciousness that they've broken through people like them. The other thing I wanted to say is I don't believe Carolyn McCarthy's son was killed in that train incident. I think her husband was killed, and I think the son was wounded.
Oh, okay. I apologize, and I got that wrong. That's how she came into the limelight, though, was because of that horrible incident. And
big against the NRA and big on the gun control issue and that. And
I just wonder if she's going to be so affected by people mixing up her name with Carolyn Maloney that she's going to have to issue a statement saying how bad the N-word is, you know?
It's going anywhere. I mean, I think Maloney will make her announcement and run, and it's just a whole weird thing. Like, why this week before? It was
mm-hmm.
dumb-headed thing for her to do, but Gillibrand, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into the whole political thing, but...
But anyway, back to Bruno.
Because yeah.
This thing, people, it's getting these tepid reviews. It's very... But you saw it, right?
Yes, I did.
And what was your opinion of it?
Oh, I thought it was outrageous. It was amazing. It's the kind of thing that just makes you kind of shrink back in horror, but also fascination and amazement, and makes you realize how people really react to certain situations. I mean, it was brilliant the whole way through, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I will just mention one thing. The World Peace March is starting October 2nd, runs through the end of November, and people on Long Island are going to get involved in it, and hope WUSB will be too. Peace, man.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for your call. And let's quickly get out of delay. Yes. Interesting topic, interesting thing to talk about. But this is one other thing I just wanted to point out before we go. And that's this other story that came out about little people. Yeah, little people. They are calling on the Federal Communications Commission to ban the use of the word midget on broadcast TV because apparently midget is an offensive word. Now, you know what? This is all based on an episode of NBC's Celebrity Apprentice. And in that episode, according to this story, contestants created a detergent ad called Jesse James and the Midgets. Yeah, the contestants, including Joan Rivers, suggested bathing little people in the detergent and hanging them to dry. Okay, that's offensive. That's nasty. But you know what? It was just said in this sentence as little people, and it was just as offensive as if I had said midget to me anyway. Calling on the FCC to ban more words, that's precisely the wrong way to go about things. It's not right. All right, that applause is not for me. That applause is for Phil Oakes. Enjoy. We'll see you next week. LTW at 2600.com. Good night.
And only want to learn, but it's hard to read through the rise and smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I like to make a promise that I like about that I to say, sir, I'll lay it down.
I'm sorry, I can't allow this. Not to Phil. No, this CD player, it sucks! I'm sorry, it's just awful. Oh, I should have said a different word, shouldn't I? That might have offended somebody. Hang on. That CD player was... This CD player just rejected it. Oh, my God. CD player is not all it could be. All right. We're loading now. We're loading. Please, we're sorry. The whole drama of this has been lost, but we're going to try and play this again. Phil Oakes, everybody. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. Yeah, that's a great email address. We'll see you next week.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rise and smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you've given me a number, and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, you almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I wish that you'd make up your mind. I wish that you'd decide that I should live as freely as those who live outside. 'Cause we also are entitled to the rights to be in doubt. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you'd like to be my father, you'd like to be my dad, and give me kisses when I'm good and spank me when I'm bad. But since I left my parents, I've forgotten how to bow. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. And things, they might be different if I was here alone, but I've got a friend or two who no longer live at home, and we'll respect our elders just as long as they allow. That when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I've read of other countries where the students take a stand. They've even helped to overthrow the leaders of the land. Now I wouldn't go so far to say we're also learning how, but when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. So keep right on a-talking and tell us what to do. But if nobody listens, my apologies to you. And I know that you were younger once, 'cause you sure are older now. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. So I'm just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now.